Yo, what up? It's your boy Kobe Mack, and this is the Kobe Told Me podcast. Yo, whenever I want to deep dive with the Mack himself, where I get to amplify my movie reviews for your listening pleasure, would you please consider giving your boy a follow? I'm on all the socials at Kobe Told Me on Twitter and Instagram, and I'm on Facebook at Kobe Mack. Welcome back. This is episode 44, the Extraction review. Whew, y'all, another epic week is closing out in these books. And before we close it out on quarantine week 7, I've got something to say. First up, the 2020 movie count is still, and I gotta remind myself because I may forget, stopped at 28 movies at the theater as of this recording. And there will still be a bunch more to go. So for all you tinfoil hat wearing motherfuckers, anybody with these conspiracy theories thinking the movie industry is going to die, especially with the chaos that has happened between the exhibitors and the distributors, aka the movie theaters and the studios, it ain't happening. I put money on that. So for those that aren't in the loop, this is what I heard. All right. Movie studios versus the movie theaters. So I'm going to address this at the top. How did it all start? Obviously, COVID-19 has changed our entire world. And what my world is the film and TV industry. Because of quarantine, stay-at-home orders, whatever, a lot of businesses are being impacted. And regular outlets to be able to consume our content are no longer available. So movie theaters got to make a decision. Yo, I got to close. Now, I do not agree with the way the AMC, Regal, and a lot of other movie theaters are handling their employees and their people, right? But hey, I get it. It was a kind of rocky situation to be in. No one could have prepared for this. And we have movie studios trying to do the same thing. You got a lot of movie studios saying, you know what? We're just going to go ahead and push ourselves out 6 to 9 months. We're going to go ahead, in some instances, put ourselves out to a year. Universal got in quick with their Fast and Furious franchise, where we had Fast and Furious 9 that was set to open up in May. And I'm thinking, oh, we're going to push this thing back 3 months. They said, nah, I'll see you next year, homie. They took the Fast and Furious 10 spot, and Universal has definitely been aggressive in restructuring and shaking up their theatrical windows for their releases. Uniquely enough, though, Trolls World Tour, a movie that I was really looking forward to because I enjoyed the original, they said, you know what? We're going to forego the theatrical window in its entirety. And instead of pulling a Fast 9, we're going to go straight to premium video on demand, aka PVOD. Now, that already rustled some feathers because it's a movie that definitely was going to have a lot of attention. It's a family kids film, would have brought in a lot of money. And if there was no COVID-19, status quo would have been, you know, exactly the same, and this movie would have been released as it should have been. But they said, we're going to be the first test case, because Universal has been trying to find a way to kind of get out of the handshake, wink, wink deal that a lot of the theater owners and movie studio heads entered in decades ago, you know? So understand that there's that underlying this too, right? So they released the movie a few weeks ago, and it does pretty well. And because of that, you got one of the big wigs over at Universal's like, yo, in a roundabout way, okay, in a Wall Street Journal article says, as soon as theaters reopen, we expect to release movies on both formats. That was the quote from Wall Street Journal. Pretty much, let's say if Trolls World Tour was to come out on that same night of release, let's say it's a Thursday night release, I'm going to go watch it in Dolby with Mini Mac at 7 o'clock, probably at 12:01, you know, earlier in that night or morning, however you want to put it, it would have been available on VOD. Now, you can understand from a theater operation standpoint, yo, I thrive on being the, like, having the exclusive rights to be able to, you know, have folks see this movie. And in turn, we split the profits. It's typically 50-50. In some cases, it's 60-40, the 60 going to the studio. Because the bulk of the money that the exhibitors, aka the movie theaters, make is from concessions and other related product and merchandise that they sell. That's how they make their money. So you can understand them being a little bit butthurt to go this way. Now, understandably so, it's a business. I'm cool with Universal trying to find a way to be able to get their movie seen, because let me tell y'all, all of these studios right now, they're losing money. When you have to push your film back, it's losing money. You have sunken costs in marketing, that's lost. The availability of your actors in their windows, that's lost. It is tough. I can imagine the hundreds of millions of dollars that are being lost just in the span of a couple of months that we've had this quarantine due to COVID-19. However, AMC responds, a big wig over there, sees this and is like, okay, effective immediately, we will no longer play any Universal movies in any of our theaters. And my jaw dropped. I'm like, yo, gee, hold on, You saying no Fast and Furious 9? No Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom? No new Despicable Me movie that's coming out? No, like, future Illumination movie or DreamWorks movie or, like, anything in concert with Universal, Focus Features and stuff like that? No Blumhouse movies. Yo, no Blumhouse movies, y'all. That means no Halloween. No Candyman. They're saying none. And they are the largest theater operator in the world with about 1,000+ theaters around the world. Personally, I think that was not a bright move. You know what this sounds like? These are two men in an unfamiliar and unusual circumstance that are getting in their feelings. You know, so we got this quarrel that started between the largest theater chain AMC and one of the largest studios in Universal. And now Regal has jumped on to the theater owner sign, which is expected. And this disagreement kind of calls into question whether movie theaters will truly be able to go back to normal after this outbreak ends. And the thing is that we have the studios and the exhibitors, they're both kind of grappling with how they're gonna keep their businesses afloat to kind of weather this storm. Like I said off the rip, the theater industry ain't going nowhere, y'all. So, like, keep in mind, the theater industry has been around for damn near 100 years. Oh, TVs are coming in the house. It's going to kill the movie industry. Nope. Video cassette home box office is going to kill the movie industry. Nope. DVD and Blu-ray. Nope. Early streaming. Nope. This is a temporary circumstance, and we should not be making long-term decisions off of temporary circumstances. Now, looking further into Trolls World Tour, yo, I clap it up for you. Great job. It broke box office records for PVOD. It's reported to have made $100 million in the first 3 weeks of its run, domestically, I believe, right? But the thing is that that's really not a strong test case because there's no competition. We are in a global pandemic. Families got their kids at home doing online learning, which is frustrating. And they've already watched all the shit that's already in their house. So these kids are begging to watch something new. Whatever it is, give it to me new. I know because I bought the fucking movie twice. Accidentally. I'm telling you, man, this technology thing, I'm still getting used to it. I bought Trolls World Tour. I spent $40 and I watched that movie 6 times in the span of 48 hours. I was going to get my money's worth. Now tell me something. Before quarantine, would anybody have spent $20 on a brand new movie? Nope. It's a psychological thing where we're willing to spend $10, $20, $40, $60, $80 to take our family to the movie theaters because it's an escape. It's an experience. I truly believe wholeheartedly, and as a storyteller and filmmaker, I believe that, and as a critic as well, experiencing a movie in a communal setting is a shared experience that can amplify a movie. And also, depending upon how bad the movie is, can hurt a movie. You laugh differently at a movie when you're watching it in a theater with a, you know, a huge crowd versus inside of your home. I can't imagine have watching Avengers Endgame last year and experiencing that for the first time in my home. I'm telling you, when Captain America wields Mjolnir for the first time and there's like this burst and excitement and you hear the crowd swell of enjoyment, you don't get that at home. And is that the case for every movie? No. But you know the movies when you know the movies and you don't want to miss that on the big screen. Shit, I love Dolby. Hashtag Kobe does Dolby. Hashtag Kobe misses Dolby. I love the sound. I love the picture. Why are you going to spend, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to try to produce a movie that you're going to watch on a 32-inch screen? Or shit, a 5.5-inch screen on your smartphone or your laptop? You're willing to forego IMAX? Nah, son. I want Tenet on the biggest screen possible. I want Wonder Woman on the biggest screen possible. And looking at the dollars and cents, yo, Trolls 2, aka Trolls World Tour, it costs about $100 million of production to make. And you can guess somewhere between, because of, you know, the restructure and kind of foregoing the theatrical release, let's say maybe they only spent somewhere between $20 and $50 million on marketing, because they already kind of had that engine already going, right? And when we talk about revenue and the way that the theater split the cost with the studio, they're only talking about that profit split. So of course, like, of course, the more revenue that you make, you know, when you're going just the PVOD, right? And keep in mind, those outlets for the video streaming, like, you know, Fandango and Movies Everywhere and Vudu and stuff like that, it's an 80-20 split. So Universal is going to make out and make more money off of their 80 with the video on demand release versus the 60 or 50 that they're getting with the theaters. So yeah, if the movie made $100 million, I got 80 in revenue versus, you know, going the traditional way. Now keep in mind, if you're kind of comparing this to Trolls, the original movie made $153 million domestically. Well, yeah, 80% of 100 million is more than 50% of 153 million. But what you fail to consider are the other factors. One, we're in a global pandemic. There are no other big content releases that are fighting for that time frame. And don't forget as well that on top of the $350 million worldwide box office the first Trolls made, it then had a VOD window to get that 80-20%. I wasn't really able to find successful. But let's say it's another $50 million that they're able to make off of that, which brings in solid money. And then you have the home video purchase window where everybody's getting their Blu-rays and their, you know, their iTunes downloads and their DVD releases. And then they get everything else. So yeah, Universal wants it all. They want the double dip. They say, yeah, going forward, we're gonna get the theatrical window money and the PVOD. I get that, but it can severely hurt if they were to go through with that, the theatrical experience. It just is what it is. So I think that both of these execs are kind of talking at both sides of their mouth, and they kind of should just shut the fuck up. Like, believe me, Trolls World Tour made money, but it ain't making money, money, money. Like, it ain't making money, money, money. You know what I'm saying? He kind of came back out a little bit later and kind of backtracked his comments, just saying, oh no, until things kind of get to normal, then we'll do that. Well, yeah, I guess that makes sense, because there are a few theaters that are open. And I live in a state where we are in phase one of reopening our state. And I know that, I mean, of course, AMC and Regal, they're not going to be reopened for a while. I said this, you know, a pod ago. Don't expect the same number of theaters reopen. Don't expect the same level of staff. Don't expect the same level of attendance in the theaters for a little while. It just is what it is. But we got to keep the sanctity of that theatrical experience alive. I believe that wholeheartedly. And so does Hollywood. So please, don't get all like, oh man, it's the end. It's not. I promise you that. We want to put money on it? Let's put money on it. But because there's nothing to watch in the theater, I've been trying to watch some stuff at home. I really, really have been. Like, I obviously got around to watching Extraction, but you ever just have one of those weeks? And maybe you guys can kind of like empathize a little bit, like since, you know, we're in this quarantine. I used to spend 3 to 5 nights or times or visits of my week at the movie theater. And the bulk of what you would hear your boy talk about was in cinema, you know, new releases. And I didn't really have time to stream. And now that I do have time to stream, I'm kind of cycling through a lot of different stuff that I either missed or that it's coming out. And let me tell you something, you know, the streaming giants, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, and stuff like that, they're putting out content and really taking advantage of all these eyes at home to watch. So it's hard to keep up. Really, really hard. There was a gang of shit that I told y'all to watch last week, and I missed a lot of it. Not on purpose, but I kind of whiffed. I guess I backslid a little bit. And I've been on this like superhero kick too. So like, you know, it's different when I'm in the mood to watch a movie and when I'm in the mood to watch TV, right? Like it's so odd, even though it's on the same, like, you know, platform, right? Like I've been on this superhero kick, and I was watching Flash. I caught up with that entire last season. Now this current season that I think is having the season finale either this week or next week, I have to wait for that to come on Netflix like the day after, you know, it's done. And I'm gonna get to it. I've been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yo, shout out to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., man. I got caught up in like the past three seasons that I missed. And I think that they have a season premiere coming up soon. If not, it just started. And yo, Phil Coulson, Mac, May, Daisy Johnson. It's crazy how much that they were able to put into this show, especially with going in. This is supposed to be a companion piece to the MCU. It no longer is a companion piece for the MCU. It's kind of doing its own thing, but it's really interesting how they're keeping it afloat. Because like, the world that they're in should be the world that we see in Avengers Endgame, and it ain't the same world. And now I'm watching Arrow. And what the fuck happened to Arrow? My God, I'm such a completist. Like, that's the reason why I decided to go back and actually watch this freaking show. Like, I love Stephen Amell, man. I was such a big fan of him, like, in the beginning of this run. But, like, you know, the 22-plus episode demand from network episodic TV is just such a grind for these type of stories. It needs to be in that kind of sweet 8 to 13 episode. Now, obviously, ain't no network television, you know, show going to give you only 8 episodes. But I think you get like 13. I think it's so much better to kind of streamline everything because there's so much fluff. And this Arrow shit, I don't know, man. Like, I swear, if I hear the fucking word vigilante one more time, they say it like 10 times. Vigilante, vigilante, shut up! Damn. But I'm going to keep watching it. I think I'm in season 7. And I'm almost done with that season. And there is like season 8, which I think is the last season. Yeah. It's a chore, but I'm going to get through it. And it kind of made me think. Somebody was talking some junk on Twitter. And I was like, yo, the greatest superhero TV show of all time is Daredevil. Hands down, still the GOAT. That first season was phenomenal. And there's some folks that kind of didn't like the second season. I love the Electric season. It was really, really good. And then third season, like, there was such a big redemption from what they tried to do with the Defenders. All around, great series. Don't at me. And if you do, you had to come correct. And I did get a chance to watch some HBO stuff. Obviously, Westworld, still a banger. Can't wait. I think the finale is this weekend. I cannot wait to kind of summarize my entire feelings on the series. You know, my boy Aubrey has been watching it. I'm gonna have to get him on the pod. We can kind of go through it together. Yeah, you know what? I think that's smart because there's so many questions. This show is so unique to me. I love sci-fi and I love drama and the fact that it matches it up all together and it's evolved every season. I'm really excited to bounce my thoughts off of someone else. I think that'd be really good. So be on the lookout for it. And Run with Dominic Gleason, Merritt Weaver. Finally, episode 3. I kind of have an idea of what the fuck is going on. Like, it was really interesting, kind of like the intrigue to what the dynamic of these two's relationship was. And like, now it's pretty much, they were like either former college girlfriend and boyfriend or flings. And I guess they made an agreement to kind of have a code when they text Run, they pretty much just run and split from whatever their lives that they're having to each other for like a little, you know, day or 2 day or 3 day romp, which I find intriguing. And knowing that this is executively produced by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and having binged all of Fleabag seasons 1 and 2, I'm very intrigued by the way her mind works and how she explores love and physical connection and, you know, mental stability. It's really interesting, and I'm really excited to kind of see where else the series goes. So, yo, watch Run. And, yo, I completely whiffed on Bad Education. I'm sorry. Not because I don't love Hugh Jackman. I don't love Allison Janney, because I do. And I talked it up a lot. I was like, yo, y'all got to watch this movie. I was just never in a mood to watch it. Like, raise your hand if you're like me, where you just like, when it comes to a movie, especially if you're watching a lot of TV, like, I just gotta be in the mood to watch a movie. Like, when I watch Arrow, I'm paying attention to Arrow, but I could also do like other things. And I just wasn't in the mood to watch Bad Education, but I will, because I do want to get a review out for it. I'm also kind of behind on my reviews. Y'all may have known. Y'all haven't seen too many Kobe Tomy posts. There's a lot of stuff that's going on in my life personally that with this quarantine, bouncing being a parent to an at-home school learning, you know, my responsibilities as a husband and a lot of other things, it's been tough to try to get content out. And this week I felt it the most and I'm behind a lot. So I'm going to try my best tomorrow to like really go through and just get out everything. So if you see like a gang of posts and you get tagged in a bunch of shit, you're welcome. And anybody, yo, if anybody's seen, you know, Sela in the Spades, please get at your boy, because I've got thoughts on that. And I don't know why the movie just ain't hitting me, especially how excited I was for when I saw the trailer. Yeah, it's, please talk to me. But what I'm here to talk about is Extraction, the newest Netflix movie, or as I like to call it, Extra Action. It lives up to exactly that. And thank God, shout outs to the best action movie of 2020 and to Chris Hemsworth for finally delivering a hit outside of the MCU. Yo, clap you up, boy. Way to go, my man. Yo, a great action movie has got to have guns, melee weapons, explosions, car chases, dope hand-to-hand combat with sick fight choreography, big-ass set pieces, a decent story, and engaging characters. That's the Colby told me great action movie formula. And in Extraction's case, it's got most of that. Like, the Russos, they unfortunately leave a lot to be desired on story and characters. Like, you know, those two big things that matter to a movie. But it's undeniable how badass this movie is everywhere else. Like, it's got the production values that you come to expect from this type of Netflix movie. And as a bonus, yo, the cinematography is great. Like, it's so strong from the jump. And this movie produces one of the best simulated one-shot sequences in action movie history. I said that. And the direction, uniquely, this is coming from first-time feature director Sam Hargrave. He's a stunt coordinator and choreographer. He's worked on a gang of the MCU stuff and has done a lot of things. Kind of similar to like what Chad Stahelski did, you know, with the John Wick series, right? And, you know, I've worked with stunt coordinators before, and the way that, like, it's amazing how their mind works, because they can really understand how to make things look visually. But sometimes it's a little challenging trying to connect that to a intriguing story. And I like the world that's being built here. Like, if you can imagine Triple Frontier, it's got that. It's got it's got the gloss of Six Underground, just kind of minus the slow-mo and the lens glare, but with like a yellower hue. It's a bloody world. This is a savage world that we're in this, I forget what part of India we are in. And the thing is, I think there's details of like where we are that I missed because I just didn't care. Because the script, not saying that it didn't care, just didn't do the greatest job at making me give a fuck. But like, I like this world, and I love how bloody this movie is. And I'll say this, yo, if you are, you know, if you're partial to violence towards kids, this ain't the movie for you. Like, they throw a fucking kid off the roof. I mean, you don't see the kid hit the ground or nothing like that, but like, it's, you know, he's off the roof. You know what I'm saying? But like, you know, this is produced by Joe and Anthony Russo, obviously the directors of, you know, Captain America Civil War, you know, Captain America the Winter Soldier, Avengers Endgame, Avengers Infinity War. Like, we know them. Joe Russo wrote this script based off of a graphic novel called Ciudad by Andy Parks. And, okay, you know, in kind of looking this up, there's a movie poster I found where, you know, the Chris Hemsworth character, Tyler Rakes, like, it's just say Tyler Rake, right? And I'm like, I can kind of see them wanting to do this John Wick thing. And I think where John Wick succeeds exceedingly more than this film is that it not only gives you the world and gives you the action, but it gives you not just John Wick as a character, but other characters that you remember and other scenes that you remember. And like, you know, the Continental, the Bowery, and the Bowery King, and the ballerinas and stuff like that. It's just so cool. And we get to spend enough time where all of those individual parts, like, they kind of really shine on their own. And I think this movie leans a lot on Chris Hemsworth, and he does a great job here, especially with his action. Like, he reportedly, he's done a lot of his own stunts, you know, inside of this film, and it's a really great job. And he kind of leans into what makes Chris Hemsworth Chris Hemsworth, except I never got a Tyler Rake. I got Chris Hemsworth, motherfucking name. You know what I'm saying? Like, he leans into his badassness. Like, we get introduced to this dude waking up from a nap and then jumping off of a cliff several hundred feet into the water and then, like, going to, like, this underwater meditation. It's really dope. I would love to try it. And you got this hot lady. She's in a red dress. And, like, I don't remember her name at all. But, like, she's, like, his handler or something like that. Yo, the one thing, like, I've always thought about inside of, like, these mercenary movies you see is, like, there's always, like, this downtrodden lead character who's great at his job, but he needs the money. But at the same time, he lives like shit. Like, what does he need the money for? just to fuel like his drug or alcohol addiction? Like, who the fuck spends that much money on drugs and beer? And maybe because I don't have the addiction, I don't know. But like, I just always find that funny. And it's cliche a lot into like, you know, the beats of like the screenplay. You know, like you got like those really, you know, those one-liners that are trying to contemplate this person's, you know, grip on reality. You're hoping if you spin the chamber enough times, you'll catch a bullet. Like, okay. But there's still a lot to be good there. Like, yo, Hemsworth does a good job. And I would love to see, like, he's no John Wick in this, but like, boy, the film really does want to be Wick. And especially Netflix would love to have this be like a Wick type of world, especially with some surprises that happen, you know, in the film too. But I like the way how Hemsworth is able to use his comedic chops appropriately in this film. He's not hamming it up or anything like that. He really, really isn't. And it's a shame that the writing, I think, just doesn't care enough about every other character. Like, I don't remember their names. I don't really remember what's motivating them. At some point, I kind of was siding with the bad guy and like how he was doing things. I was kind of empathizing with them. And like this random pop-up of David Harbour out of nowhere. But ultimately, this film is badass. And like that 12-minute simulated one-shot action scene, it's excellent. Like, it's got this one-shot gunfight, and then it moves into a car chase, and the car chase moves into the ground, and then there's a hand-to-hand chase fight, and then they fall off the building, and then from like the third story, and then we switch back to a knife fight, and then a motherfucker gets hit by a car, and then another motherfucker gets hit by a car. There's multiple cars hitting people, and it all happens in this 12-minute heart-pounding, mind-like boggling non-stop action. And it's I rewind it like 3 times. It's really, really good. I cannot recommend enough to watch Extraction, aka Extraction. See what I did there? Extraction. Right. Yo, the Colby Tommy rating for Extraction is a 7 out of 10. It's directed by Sam Hargrave. It's written by Joe Russo, starring Chris Hemsworth and a bunch of other folks that I don't remember. Runtime is 116 minutes, probably about 20 minutes too long, and it's rated R. Yo, what you got opening up this weekend, aka last night, is All Day and a Night on Netflix. It's a drama with Jeffrey Wright and Ashton Sanders. Okay. I was really giving Asher Sanders shit on Captive's Fate. Because it was a shit movie. I was just like, what the fuck is going on? But I will say that this movie is directed by Joe Robert Cole. And when I saw the trailer, there was something about it that I was like, huh. The trailer didn't automatically get me, but there was a lot of folks who I respect that were really digging the vibes that it was getting. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go in open-minded. I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard some varying things about it. And I'm interested to see where I land on it. And I'm going to get to it and get a review out. Also, another kind of teen romantic comedy, The Half of It, directed by Alice Wu. It's about an unexpected teenage love triangle. Ding, ding, ding. Teenage, romance, comedy, love triangle. That's right up your boy's alley. I'm with it. I definitely want to be able to see that. And really excited for this new limited series, Hollywood. My man, Ryan Murphy. Shout out to Nip Tuck. One of the greatest sexy dramas ever. He produces this epic limited series recounting the heyday of Hollywood, ding, 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 from the perspective of aspiring directors and actors. Ding, ding, ding. Keep in mind, yo. And I don't think I have said on my pod before, like, how I got in the game. I'll get around to that. I graduated high school in 2005, and I moved to LA, and I did my actor thing, and I was marginally successful. I'll go into the details of like exactly like what the ins and outs were, but like I love that life. I love Hollywood. I love old Hollywood and seeing like how, you know, folks who crave fame and have this creativity need to be, you know, an outlet. It's always interesting. So I'm always going to love and adore a show that kind of leans into that. So really excited for Hollywood. I don't know if I'll be able to binge it. It's 8 episodes. I'm trying to think I'm going to binge it tomorrow. I possibly can, but like a part of me is like, fuck, I need to finish Arrow. I need to get that shit out of my way. I need to prioritize things. I really, really do. But there is another new show. Speaking of Arrow, Stephen Amell's cousin, Rob Yamel, Upload on Amazon Prime, just dropped this weekend as well. A man is able to choose his own afterlife after his untimely death. Like Rob Yamel, this seems to be from like, you know, I guess it's like, it says from like the creators of like Parks and Recreation and The Office, but like if you were to take Parks and Recreation, The Office, and then kind of add in The Good Place, this is what that looks like. The production values don't look super great, but I think the sci-fi world is what I'm interested in, and hopefully the comedy is also good too. And I pray that it's like 30-minute episodes. If it is, I'm gonna like, I'll probably get rid of that this week. But it looks interesting. So that's definitely something that I would recommend. As I always say, I recommend you guys to be able to come back to the podcast. Yo, coming soon, and I promise you it's coming this week. Kobe told me about my brand new interview series. First up is Rose's Reviews. It's my Whenever I Want To interview pod where I get to chop it up with the who's who of the dopest individuals I know and hopefully some that I'm getting to know better. It's a kickback conversation about life, movies, how they intersect, and all for you, your listening pleasure. I got Kobe told me about the DCEU dropping this week with Man of Steel. Please love and follow your boy so you can be able to love and respect this movie because you should. There's a brand new episode of Feeling Films of Black Label out right now. It's a great catch up with myself, Aaron Hunley, Kales Davis, aka Black Nerd Magic, E-Man from E-Man's Movie Reviews. I love spending time with my kings and queen, just kind of catch up with one another. We're going to get another one out because there's been like a lot of content. I think we definitely do want to review all day and a night and probably Black AF. And yeah, so expect a gang of black reviews from the Black Label coming very soon as well. But a new episode is out right now. I'll put some things together in the works for the Stream Team podcast because obviously, as you could tell by this particular episode, there's a ton of shit that I am missing out on. And I need a team to be able to help you and me get everything together. Yo, you can visit my website for any and all new written content when I'm in the mood to put it out there at KobeToldMe.com and catching me grow the hashtag guest list whenever I can. If you're in for a unique perspective to guest on your podcast, reach out to your boy, Kobe Mac at KobeToldMe.com. And remember, when they ask you where you heard it from, tell them Kobe told me. Peace.